Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Hello, and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. And after what I thought was going to be a very forward-thinking, open, and exciting episode last week, alcohol has officially been canceled this week. It has been a wild ride over the last 7 days to get into the new year regarding wine and the alcohol industry, and we're going to dive into it here in just a quick moment. But first and foremost, we got a couple of announcements for you as usual. First and foremost, as always, thank you all so much for listening, downloading, sharing the show with other wine-loving friends, family, whatever the case may be. It is lovely to have you all here with us. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcasts. You can also follow us on all of our social networks. That would mostly be on Instagram, of course, YouTube, where you can catch the video version of the show, see me dance around here in my office. On top of that, we are also on the Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter. We try to post a little bit of everything everywhere, but most active on Instagram and YouTube. Our handles are at MTGA Wines. That is where you can find us. We are still brought to you by Premier Crew Clothing. Of course, that is our handy dandy little fun, kitschy, wine-inspired t-shirt line that we got going. You can head to Premier Crew, that's CRUclothing.com. Use the code Premier to get 20% off your first order and check out some nice, fun, interesting t-shirts that I even have a few of hanging up in my closet because I love them so very much. Last but certainly not least, of course, our own wine label, MTGA Wines. We are getting ready for a whole brand new year of wine releases, new wines, new vintages, all kinds of great stuff, travel and events around the country. This week, we started sending out our winter newsletters. Some of you have received those already. Others of you will be receiving them as the week goes on. Please be sure to check your email inboxes for those just to stay in touch and keep track of some of the updates and things that we have coming your way. I'm very, very excited as we get into the springtime to get back on the road, see some of you around the country. Of course, also have you out here to the great old Napa Valley to sit down in the cave and get after it. Of course, if you need any more information on who we are, what we do, all of that good stuff, you can head to our website, mtgawines.com. That is also where you can submit questions to our monthly Q&A here on the show. If you go to that website and scroll down just a little bit, again, that's mtgawines.com. There's a little email box that you can fill out at the bottom of our homepage where you can submit questions, anything wine, hospitality, kind of business, production, grape growing related. We'll try and factor them into our monthly Q&A sessions that we do at the end of every month. So thank you all for submitting your questions, both past, present, and future, as they come down the line. So, man, what a week. I gotta bring up the article here. And frankly, there's a bunch of them that you can dive into. Where to even begin this episode? Because, you know, this might be the case for some of you. You know, a lot of us are probably, you know, probably the best singers we've ever heard of when we're driving in the car by ourselves. I mean, we can belt it out, right? Like, we kill it. Clearly, we could win a Grammy tomorrow if we really wanted to. You know, I recognize I'm probably not the best car singer. I do a pretty good job. Like, not like I'm okay. But it's definitely where I have, like, my best podcast sessions. It's where the best comes out of me for the show here. It's how I prep. And I have lovely conversations with myself about how I want the show to be, where I want it to go, and the topics that we're going to cover. And when it comes to the last week, and actually 4 days ago, when the New York Times published an article stating at the top, Surgeon General calls for cancer warnings on alcohol, I get a little fired up, as you might expect, as well as most likely many, many other people within the industry. Though I haven't seen a lot of responses just yet. I think the alcohol industry in general is trying to figure out which way is up with this particular topic. But we're going to go ahead and just dive right into it. And as I'm, you know, practicing in my vehicle, going to and from the winery and running errands over the last couple of days, really I was kind of leaning on the more adversarial take. Now, clearly, I have a bias here. My roof over my head, the food that I put on my table, the tea that I am drinking in front of me is bought and paid for by the wine that I make and wine that I sell. I have a clear bias when it comes to this and whether or not I think alcohol can be a beneficial part of life. So naturally, I went kind of the fire and brimstone route with this conversation. I was having it out with myself in the vehicle, trying to figure out how I really wanted to approach today's episode and talk about the U.S. Surgeon General, the WHO, and the rhetoric behind kind of the anti-alcohol movement as it continues to just bulldoze forward. And naturally, you know, I figure you might expect, like, it would be natural for me to be kind of that, fight fire with fire. Like, let's get after this, you know. And as particularly yesterday, I'm recording this on Tuesday the 7th. You might be listening to it on the 8th or past that. You know, particularly yesterday, January 6th, I was going through this in my head. I'm trying to figure out, like, realistically, if any of us in the alcohol industry just dig our heels into this and say, no, you're wrong, I don't think that that's the right approach, as much as many of us want to say that. I think there needs to be more of a dialogue here. And I'm going to try and do that a little bit today to hopefully get at least a conversation started. Because, as I mentioned at the top, I'm a little biased. Alcohol and wine is what I do for a living. It's what so many of my friends and colleagues and family do for a living. It's already been tough to keep our businesses going over the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 40 plus whatever years. This is not an easy industry to be in, period. And if it's only going to get more difficult and more regulated, I mean, a lot of us are just done for, period. Full stop. That's the way it is. That is not being dramatic. That is not being inflammatory. That just is what it is. Especially over the last 2 years, as we've seen already mergers and acquisitions, bankruptcies, and all kinds of other things, and people kind of rolling up shop because it's just not worth it anymore. So before we kind of get into what I think is going to be my more level-headed approach, and I'm sure there are some of you out there that are like, Mike, just lay into it. Go for it. I know some of you want the tea, some of you want the action, but I don't think that that is the route to go here. I'm going to try to be as cool, calm, and concise about this as I possibly can be, because there are a lot of things I obviously disagree with, despite what maybe some of the inherent risks of consuming alcohol are. Now, before I get too far into this, I should probably preface this with something that may not be outrageously surprising for some of you, and you probably feel the same way. is that when a government agency comes out and tells me how I should be living my life, I am inherently skeptical. Just the way it is. That is from any number of factors in the history of the politicking that has occurred around the day-to-day lives of people and what our government has done. Just in my lifetime, over the last 20 years of being a somewhat coherent adult, you know, let's take that into perspective. And by no means am I trying to lean more to the left or more to the right here. I'm just going to spit some things out. Some of them you're probably going to disagree with. Others, you might be like, yep, that was some bullshit. But these are the examples I'm going to give you. Number one, and probably the biggest that I go back to, and this isn't necessarily food and beverage related, but it's the war in Iraq and WMDs, which clearly weren't there. You have a guy like Dick Cheney, who's in fact a war criminal, and his collusion to get his company Halliburton some great government contracts. You're like, all right, clear conflicts of interest, clear lying, and put us into a 20-year quagmire. Awesome. Fantastic. More recently, you have a Russian collusion hoax that was propagated by a certain political party against another one because of reasons, whether you like them or not, ended up not being true. And it was only propagated by the Clinton party. Yes, I'm calling it the Clinton party. In 2016 to try and undermine Trump. And unfortunately, none of it panned out. It just happened to be something they said. And that they continued to hammer on. What news networks continue to hammer on, turns out there was no basis for it. Sorry. That's the way it is. You could go more recently with candidates or current sitting presidents or congresspeople like Dianne Feinstein who are propped up and told, no, it's fine. They can keep going when they clearly cannot do the job in front of them. Shoot, you could go all the way back to the Reagan administration and good old Nancy and the war on drugs saying these things that we don't understand are Schedule One verboten. There's a prohibition on them. And then you end up with the cartel issue that we have today. And also, by the way, a lot of now research that's being done on some of those Schedule One substances that are hugely, turns out, beneficial for things like depression and PTSD in the form of magic mushrooms and MDMA. Even...
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Very conservative congresspeople like the Dan Crenshaw of Texas are for some of these therapies. You could say that over the years, the U.S. government has gotten it wrong a lot of times in a lot of different ways. Now, a lot of it doesn't necessarily have, you know, anything to do, especially with what I just talked about, on your health or well-being when it comes to consuming products, except for maybe the war on drugs. That if you're a consumer of those, that probably has some sort of effect on your body, your psyche, and whatever the case may be, right? That probably goes without saying. And this could be the moment that cigarettes and tobacco had. What was it back in the 60s when the Surgeon General came out and said, hey, this is probably not good for you? And the world had to listen up. Is that this moment? Is this that moment for alcohol? Have we just been wrong the whole time? Has the, we as the industry just been lying to you blatantly the whole time? Maybe. I don't think so. But that seems to be kind of the correlation between these two moments that some people have drawn. So with all of those examples I just presented, there's a reason why anytime a government official says anything about anything, I inherently start asking questions. But I don't do that without at least having some sort of basis. I'm not going to sit here and be like, okay, this is what the Surgeon General said, and I disagree with it, and not at least do a little bit of reading and a little bit of research. And over the last 2 days, I've gone from one news agency to the next, to the next, to the next. All of them are basically saying the same thing here. I've tried to consolidate some of those thoughts so that hopefully we can have kind of an honest conversation. Now, the Surgeon General's report goes into detail about the increased risk associated with drinking and as it pertains to cancer and the likelihood that you may contract cancer, contract's the wrong word to use, but develop cancer in some way, shape, or form through, you know, different, I'm totally messing up the medical jargon here. I apologize. I'm a, you know, winemaker idiot that works in a cave most of the time. This is not really my foray here, you know, or forte. I am messing it up today. Anyway, so, and this is kind of the absolute risk. And they use breast cancer as example, which my mother is a breast cancer survivor. So this hits pretty close to home. And for example, the Surgeon General's report states that the absolute risk of breast cancer over a woman's lifespan is about 11.3%. So roughly 11 women out of 100 are going to develop breast cancer in some way, shape, or time. And this is for those that have less than one drink per week. That risk increases to 13.1% at one drink a day and up to 15.3% at about two drinks per day in women. For men, the absolute risk of developing alcohol-related cancer increased from 10%, 10 out of every 100 individuals, for those who consume less than one drink a week to 11.4 for those that drink two drinks a week a day on average, and rises to 13% for those that have two drinks a day on average. So what we're seeing here is that from that there's somewhere between this, you know, 1 to 4% increase in the likelihood of certain cancers based on consuming alcohol in basically any quantity. That is what the report says. I'm simply quoting it. And that's what we're, I guess, arguing against a little bit here today. Now, the issues I have with some of these studies, and as they're quoted in these articles, are two main things. Because very typically, alcohol, wine in particular, has been seen as beneficial when it comes to overall health, right? You have certain things that red wine is in particular supposed to be good for when it comes to like cardiovascular health, I think helping reduce the likelihood of gallstones, amongst other things. We can ignore the resveratrol and antioxidant side of it fully because the amount of wine that you really have to consume to get enough antioxidants is a boatload. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So let's omit that for now. But these are things that are kind of widely accepted and have been really since the 1980s in what they called kind of the French paradox. For those of you that don't know what that is, basically, the French were observed as having these, in essence, kind of gluttonous lifestyles. Lots of fats, lots of cheese, lots of butter, lots of creams, all kinds of very rich foods. Yet somehow these folks were living longer than expected. Why was that? What's the difference here? And there was a loose association between, you know, this, what was kind of an extended life, and wine, because that's what they were consuming on a regular basis. You can look up the French paradox and read more about it. I'm not going to get too far into it here. But that was one of the big bases for kind of assuming, like, well, there's something to this wine thing in particular, that this has some sort of health effect that maybe is not entirely measurable, but clearly there are certain people that are not living the, quote, like, healthiest of lifestyles by, you know, medical standards or dietary standards, but somehow they continue to truck along, right? Now, the argument against the French paradox and why none of that makes sense is that, well, people who drink wine aren't typically eating well. They're typically a little bit more fit. They're typically a little bit more social. There's a little bit less stress. There's a lot of kind of extenuating, you know, factors and circumstances that could actually be the benefit. It's not the wine. And that's really kind of the argument against it from what I've been able to gather, is that there are certain things, you know, that are positive, that are associated with alcohol and wine consumption that need to be omitted because that's likely where the benefits are coming from. And alcohol is still a detractor from that. That's the gist of what I've been able to understand about why people kind of argue against the potential health benefits of alcohol consumption, particularly wine consumption. What I found interesting about the studies and the statements from the Surgeon General and what every news agency has reported over the last 3 to 4 days is that they don't take into account some of those factors when it comes to their own studies. So we'll go to the next thing here. Dr. Murthy, who is the U.S. Surgeon General, said it was important to know the risk rises in alcohol as alcohol consumption increases, but each individual's risk of cancer is different, obviously. I answered the obviously part. Depending on family history, genetic makeup, and environmental exposures. I wish we had a magic cutoff. We could tell people is safe, he said. What we do know is that less is better when it comes to reducing your cancer risk. So what that tells me in my vaguely scientific, somewhat oriented brain is that you're not taking those things into account. That between people's diet, their fitness, their mental health, their genetics, and other environmental exposures, those things are not in any way, shape, or form being taken into consideration with the rising causes of cancer when combined with alcohol consumption. So my question, very simply put, is why should we omit the potential positives when talking about alcohol consumption and the things that are associated with it in terms of a better diet, more social, less stress, things of that nature? Why do we need to omit those potential environmental factors, but not include other potential negative environmental factors? To take it kind of one step further, my better half, the HBIC herself, Brittany, said, you know, there are the things that are more important. You look at the food chain, the amount of sugar people are consuming, the amount of processed foods and dyes and colors and all kinds of nonsense that goes into what we consume on a day-to-day basis, the fast food lifestyle that so many people live, the lack of access to great, high-quality produce. Isn't that a bigger problem? I would argue yes. Is alcohol kind of falling on the sword for everything else that may be wrong with how food and beverage is really, how food and beverages are really kind of consumed in this country? Potentially. I think that's a reasonable thing to say. It really, this reminded me of, this is a little bit of a tangent, but this reminded me of when foie gras was banned in California and then it came back and now it's banned again. And I love foie. I mean, it's delicious. It's fatty ducks that are very fat or geese that are very fat that, quite simply, if you're farming it correctly and you're not torturing the animals, you're simply preventing their migration. For those of you that don't know how that happens, is that these fowl typically will gorge themselves. That way they can fly hundreds and, you know, or thousands of miles. And if you prevent that migration process, they get fat. Go figure. Right? turns out if you lay around and just eat a whole bunch and don't exercise and do all kind do a lot of things that are negative for your overall health, and let's face it, the fatty livers that are in these ducks are probably not healthy for the ducks, but damn it, it's delicious. When that was outlawed in California, there was a big uproar within kind of the animal rights community, which, fair enough. They're like, we gotta win.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
We're no longer torturing these animals, and we that's a big old check in the win column for us. And my first thought was, number one, I could really use some foie right now, but number two was, is this really the win you're going to put in your column and brag about? When you're talking about factory farming, and like as I'm speaking right now, there's a huge factory farm like avian flu going around. Like, do you think that in any way, shape, or form that the conditions of these ducks and geese that you're so worried about is somehow drastically worse than the pigs, the cows, chickens, and other things that are factory farmed in this day and age to supply this fast food model that we have? Do you think that that's who you should be going after? Or do you think one of two foie gras producers in the state, in the good old US of A, you think that's who you're going to go after and make a big splash with? I'm like, you got bigger things at play here, my dude. Like, come on. What are we talking about here? Now, if you think that creating foie gras is torture and you think that alcohol creates cancer and is a problem, obviously we're going to have some disagreements there. Fair enough. But is this really the issue, or are there bigger things at play that we also need to take into account when it comes to the environmental and lifestyle factors of how people within this great country live? Right? I think that's a reasonable thing to ask and a reasonable thing to take into consideration, right? I don't think that should be ignored in any way, shape, or form. So back to the main kind of point of contention, right? It's interesting to me, kind of the... trying to think of the, I guess the best word is just the hypocrisy in considering certain environmental factors versus not, whether you're for or against alcohol consumption. Now, let's be very clear. Alcohol is not for everybody, right? There are plenty of people that should not indulge, and especially not overindulge. In fact, a lot of anti-alcohol proponents will obviously cite DUIs and fatal car crashes and injuries. They will cite depression, suicide, and abuse as potential negative effects of alcohol consumption. Valid. Fair enough. Those are all things that should hopefully be preventable. But at what point, and I think this is a kind of a grand question when it comes to alcohol consumption in general, is like, what point do we let adults be adults? In fact, in one of the articles that I read, I can't remember if it was on Reuters or the New York Times or one of the articles, there was someone that had stated that basically if alcohol was created today, it would be considered a Schedule I drug and it would be outlawed. And going back to my mention of certain psychedelics and the potential use for treating depression and PTSD, maybe not everything should be Schedule I, or at least should be prescribable in some way, shape, or form. Hell, if for those of you that don't know, MDMA used to be prescribed as a marital aid, but I digress. Now, does that mean alcohol should be a prescribed beverage for certain people? I don't know, maybe. Probably not. But should it be considered something like a Schedule One drug? And to a certain extent, maybe that is the case. It is a controlled substance. You should not be operating heavy machinery. If you tend to black out and get violent, you probably shouldn't be consuming alcohol. If you suffer from certain mental health trials and tribulations, you probably shouldn't overindulge in alcohol as well. But those are decisions that need to be made by adults. If you have any of those issues and you continue to consume or overconsume alcohol and detract from your life or the life of others in any way, shape, or form, that's a problem. And you need to rethink your relationship with alcohol. Shoot, there are plenty of folks and podcasts where I've listened to, whether it's, you know, comedians or, you know, other people in life, you know, that are just kind of talking about their experience. And they're like, yeah, I mean, I like wine, I like beer, but I can't have just one or two glasses. If I have one or two, I'm going to have six or eight. And things get crazy really fast, right? It's impossible for some people to just have a glass of wine or a beer or two. And that relationship needs to be observed and respected, or lack of a relationship, let's say. So alcohol is not for everybody, nor should it be for everybody. I think that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. So I don't, while some of the detractors will kind of state those things as like, no, alcohol's bad no matter what. For some people, yes, absolutely. For others, where it's not detracting from their life or the life of others, it's probably fine to have a glass or two of wine every once in a while and not think too much about it. Now, the last thing I really wanted to kind of dive into in regards to kind of the argument was kind of the last statement that Dr. Murthy had put forth. Was that he wishes he could tell people that there was a magic cutoff in terms of volume and frequency of the amount of alcohol is actually safe. What that tells me is that, number one, they don't know. There's so many variables that are being taken into account, or not being taken into account, I think, in this case, that they can't say, hey, if you consume one glass of wine per night for 3 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever the frequency is, here is how your life is going to be affected. Here is the exact increase of, you know, certain health issues that you may have. Which is interesting that they say that there's no quantifiable number or frequency that they can really pinpoint for everybody, but they're saying that there are these percentage increases in risk. Like, it doesn't, like, the what they're saying doesn't line up with what else they're saying. Like, there's this weird rhetoric that I can't quite pin down. And as a result, I don't know which way is up. It also goes to, you know, how it was presented in the first place. The U.S. Surgeon General stated that there are links between cancer risk and alcohol. The WHO, let's keep in mind, the World Health Organization, nearly 2 years ago in 2023 stated that there's no safe level of alcohol consumption. So this is not like new rhetoric. This is nothing that hasn't been out and about in the airwaves previously. But what does that link mean? Is there an actual correlation here? Is there a causation here? Is this similar to the Surgeon General coming out and stating cigarettes are bad and tobacco are bad for you, like they did, you know, what was it, you know, 60 years ago or whatever it was. I think it was in the 60s that they came out with that statement. Is that akin to this? Are we comparing apples to apples here? But when you say something like, I wish we had a magic cutoff, and that each individual's risk is different, clearly there's a lot of variables at play. And this one size does not fit all. You know what I did a couple years ago? We were changing health insurance companies. I had to go get myself an annual physical. I hadn't done one in a while. Probably should do it at least once a year just to make sure things are all good. But maybe this is the route we go. is that, you know, we all should take good care of ourselves. We should all probably eat better. We should all probably exercise more. We should probably go to the doctor a little more often and check in on how everything's doing. And my physician, that it was a new physician that I was working with, he's like, have you done a blood test or anything like that recently? I was like, honestly, couldn't even tell you. And he's like, well, that probably means you're due for one. So we did like the full workup, including like liver enzymes and how that's looking. Cause I knew full well that I work in the wine industry. That was that awkward conversation with the doctor saying, hey, how many alcoholic beverages do you have a week? And I was like, well, I make wine for a living. He's like, we'll go with one a day. I'm like, sure, one a day. Let's say one a day. It's more than one a day. Spoiler alert. Probably on average. Like yesterday, didn't have a single drink. Today, might have a glass of wine. We'll see. It ebbs and flows. Also depends if I'm in the mood for it or not. But we run all the lab tests, liver enzymes, all come back. We're looking good. Healthy as a horse, this one, as of 2 years ago, but I should probably go get it checked out again. You know, if you're really concerned about your own personal health and where you're at in life, you should probably consult your physician and not take wide sweeping generalizations and inflammatory rhetoric to heart. That's where I'm landing on this issue. Is that if you're truly worried, and if this is an article or a topic that really makes you think of like, man, we got a lot of wine around the house. We have cocktails, you know, a couple nights a week with friends or family, whatever. Maybe we should look into this. If that's where you're at in life, consult with your physician. Now, what's interesting is that at this stage, I've heard more and more friends and clients of ours be told by their physicians that there is also no safe level of alcohol. And to that I say, based on what? And also, what are my labs telling you? Because if it appears as though I'm healthy as a horse and I'm living the French paradox, then what's the issue? Now, this is, you know, as we get into kind of like this anecdotal stuff, because this is what I brought up at the beginning of December as well, I think, in one of our podcasts was, you know, you have groups of people that are outrageously healthy. They eat well. They exercise a bunch. They don't consume any alcohol or drugs. They don't smoke. And yet they drop dead randomly. Right? And then you have folks like Keith Richards, who has lived a very long life against all odds. So there obviously are other things that simply aren't being taken into account. And frankly, I find it hard to believe that wide sweeping generalizations, such as all of the headlines involving the Surgeon General's statements over the last week, I don't think it's helpful. Again, I'm incredibly biased. My living is in the world of wine. Making and selling wine is what I do, and I drink a lot of it as well. And I grew up in a family where a glass of wine was considered, it was a ceremonial thing as you're entertaining guests, as you're cooking dinner. It was, you weren't trying to get hammered every single night. You weren't abusing this beverage. It was simply a way to enhance conversation, you know, de-stress a little bit. For, believe it or not, a pretty shy introvert like me, I know that's hard for some of you to believe, but it's true. I get exhausted entertaining and talking to folks. I know it's not because I don't want to, it's because I love doing it, but it is very tough for me to do that. It's hard. I'm always in my own head trying to consider, you know, what do I say next? What did they think of what I just said? It's very, very crazy up here. And a glass of wine or a cocktail helps tone that down a little bit. Helps me relax and be less stressed. Again, I'm not trying to get hammered. I'm not taking tequila, you know, a bunch of tequila shots back to back to back to back. That was high school. That was a long time ago. Probably a little bit of a reason why my brain's a little all over the place. Because what is it? Our brains are still developing until we're about like 24 or so typically. So yeah, probably lay off the sauce until you're in your mid-20s. It's probably a good thing. Not a bad thing to be exposed to it or understand it or even enjoy it. But, you know, keep that in mind. Yeah, growing up in this lifestyle, kind of this very European kind of French lifestyle where a glass of wine, I mean, I had guests out to the winery on Sunday. And like, when did you start drinking wine? And I'm not kidding you, when I was 2. My first sips of wine were watered down in a glass as a part of just being a part of the pomp and the circumstance, part of the ceremony of entertaining guests and offering them a glass of wine. That was just what came natural. And it's always been a big part of our lives as a family. It's the first thing we do. We always have a cocktail available or a bottle of bubbles or some white wine. And it's just like, hey, this is how we start the night. It's a very ceremonial thing. So I obviously have a lot of like heartstrings tied to the industry, whether it's beer, wine, or spirits. It, again, puts the roof over my head, puts food on my table. So when these statements are made, as we kick off the new year, it leaves me shaking in my boots a little bit. But I think the questions that I have and the conversation that hopefully I started here today makes sense. That it's weird to me that the anti-alcohol movement will take certain things to account but willingly omit other things, especially when it comes to the extenuating circumstances and environmental factors of a individual's life. It just seems hypocritical to me. And the fact that they can't say, like, hey, here's this magic number of volume and frequency that will increase or decrease your risk X amount. They don't have that, but they will present increases in percentages regardless. Also just doesn't make sense to me. Now listen, if I'm wrong and a couple more years go by and it's decided that alcohol is verboten, I'll eat some crow. Fair enough. I am happy to admit that I'm wrong. More than happy to. But until I see and read about definitive proof where and I'm shown that any of these environmental and genetics and everything, all this stuff is taken into account, here's what I'm going to do. Is I'm going to trust my physician. I'm going to trust my own gut and how I feel, actually, not just, you know, what my opinions are, but how I feel. And I'm going to continue to consume in moderation. Because all things should be taken in moderation, including moderation. That's, for me, that's the way of the world and how it should be, and that's how we're going to continue forward. Man, I am genuinely perplexed. And frankly, after a day of being very feisty and fired up about this topic and trying to decide how we are going to approach this show today, it was disheartening. Like, I am frustrated. I'm sad. I am anxious. I'm not in a great spot right now. Because this industry has been everything to me in my life. And shoot, if the rug gets pulled out from under me, it's like, all right, well, what do I do next? Where do I go? How do I, what industry or profession do I need to try and jump into, you know, where I'm at? I'm very, very curious where this conversation goes, how we as a country and society continue to have this conversation, what happens next. My inner pessimist is like, man, it's going to get worse before it gets worse. I really don't see a light at the end of the tunnel right now, and that kind of sucks. It's kind of eating me up inside, to be completely honest. It's a bummer. Hopefully I'll be able to find some positive light at the end of that tunnel sometime soon. I hope that Man, I hope that my arguments against some of these statements and some of these articles over the last week make sense. Because in my own brain, I'm like, some of this stuff just doesn't line up. It just doesn't add up. Like, the statements just aren't, like, you're saying one thing and not taking into account another. And then also saying, like, you don't have any numbers, but you're presenting numbers. Like, it's very strange to me. And antithetical to what science is supposed to be. So some of these observational studies and what appears to be at best a correlation right now, I'm taking it with a grain of salt, albeit, shoot, I mean, we'll see where we end up. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. I really was hoping to start this year on like a really nice positive footing. And here we are, just with a bang, just a gut shot right out the gate. This is trying to take us down from the top rope, this is. But we're going to continue exploring this, talking about this as the year goes on. I think this is going to be a very interesting point of conversation when it comes to our Q&A episodes and also just what continues to be published by the U.S. Hell, I was considering just ignoring this and putting my head in the sand and be like, yeah, that didn't happen. But I think this is important stuff to talk about. I really do. Whether or not I agree or disagree with it, this is stuff that everyone should be aware of. You know, everyone here knows, if you've been listening for any point of time, that I'm all about transparency and sharing of information. And even if you disagree with it, I think that's okay. Obviously, I've presented my case for my disagreements with what's been said about alcohol consumption over the last week. I think it makes sense. I don't see how there are any flaws in my argument when it comes to how these studies and this information was presented. I'm curious if there's a rebuttal to that. And I'm curious that if there's going to be, you know, a larger movement in terms of regulation towards an anti-alcohol stance. We'll see if that legislation starts coming down the pipeline. You know, who knows? That is something that we'll have to put a big old wait and see sticker on. But for now, I am going to go have a glass of wine because I'm stressed and I'm going to go put my feet up and relax a little bit. I hope you do the same. Love you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. Again, that's Instagram, YouTube, The Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can submit questions for our monthly Q&A at mtgawines.com. Just scroll down that homepage a little bit to find the email form. You can also find out a whole lot more information on who we are, what we do on that site as well. Be sure to check out Premier Crew. That's Premier Crew, crucrew.com. Go get 20% off your first t-shirt order and have an excellent rest of your week, everybody. Love you. Mean it. Bye.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.